You wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Charles Darwin discovered something on his voyages that changed the world. He discovered a type of bird that morphed or varied from one island to the next. All these birds seemed to be related, but their bodies, their beaks, were finely honed to the unique environments of each island. From our tiny fossil record, we learned that humans showed similar adaptive qualities in their early days. But it wasn't until Dr. Karlovsky and the Time Machine that we learned just how truly diverse our ancestors were. Dr. Karlovsky has shown that every valley, every jungle, every savanna seems to have its own variation of the human form. Ancient Africa is a hominid nursery, a vibrant market of genetic material. And before you imagine all these hominids to be mere hairy apes, I should tell you that we are not the most successful hominid in the multiverse. In fact, and this may blow your mind, we're not the only species who is able to time travel. Other hominids visit us just as we visit them. Maybe one of these days you'll explore one of their ultra-futuristic versions of Earth. But let's not digress. We have something else for you today. We're sending you to sub-Saharan Africa, roughly 200,000 years ago. But this is not our past. In our timeline, humans evolved and then languished in stone technology for hundreds of thousands of years. It wasn't until quite recently that we began to settle down, farm, and build cities. There are many parallel universes in which civilizations sprung up early, and there is one world in particular that we discovered, where it started extremely early, breaking all conventions. In fact, it started so early that humans hadn't yet outcompeted their hominid cousins in the small valley where they first appeared. They lived side by side with other hominids, trading with them, breeding with them, and, in this strange world, conquering them. Please, put on your costume now, while I finish your orientation. We're sending you to a tribe known as the Beni Grath. These people live in a lush mountain valley in sub-Saharan Africa. But over in the next valley is another tribe, a warlike tribe of hominids that evolved into giants. The Beni Grath has been forced to live on the defensive. Rather than flee, they turned their village into a fortress. And as it was the only village within many miles that could defend itself against the giants, it took in refugees. The village grew into a town, and then, over the generations, into a city. There are many different species of hominid living at Beni Grath, and they all live in relative harmony. The dominant group, are the original villagers. They are larger than humans and have thick bone skulls that can absorb the blow of a club. There is one human in the city, and we'll match you with him. His name is Lazar. He's a strange little man, but quite intelligent, so our agent tells us. Just stick with him, and you should be okay. Well, don't you look the part? Very exotic. Zebra skins and white body paint. I do like this necklace of jackal teeth. Oh, and you may have noticed your stone knife is coated in tin. The Benny Grath have a basic understanding of metallurgy. Please, step on the platform, and we'll get you on your way. Now, I should mention, the Benny Grath follow a strict warrior code, and their society is survival of the fittest. As a human, you're going to be lowest on the totem pole. So, stick close to Lazar and try to stay out of trouble. It's night. You stand at the edge of the circle of warriors, illuminated by the flames of a bonfire. In the ring are two men, or perhaps they're beasts. Their thick, muscled bodies are pounding, straining against each other in a tortured fight to the death. One man is the king, the other wants to be king. Though the king is big and his body is knotted with muscle, his combatant is much younger and exudes boundless energy. As the fight progresses from strikes to grappling, the younger man's energy begins to tip the balance. Rawhead gets on top and presses the king's exhausted arms to the ground. He tries to strike the king with his elbows and choke him, but the old king always has just enough energy to pull away. And so the two struggle, exhausted, panting, the younger man on top, the older below. Rawhead not able to kill the king, but the king not willing to give up.
Rawhead can't kill the king, Lazar says. The warriors will. The king has time. Rawhead does not.
Lazar is a short, rodent-like man with buck teeth and beady eyes that are slightly too close together. His hair is thinning, and he wears it in a long, greasy ponytail down his back. He reminds you a bit of Joseph Goebbels, but in white body paint and skin. In the entire community, he's the only one you've recognized as Homo sapien, human, other than yourself, of course.
Look, see those warriors over there? See how they're
whispering to each other. You follow his finger and see a group of warriors huddled together. Their elaborate body paint and skins tells you their rank is high.
Those men are deciding what to do. If Rahet doesn't kill the king fast, those men will drag him into the night, and you'll never see him again. If it's a draw, the king wins.
The three big warriors step into the ring. Their tin-tipped spears are raised menacingly at their sides. Rawhead looks back at them. His ape-like skull is silhouetted against the bonfire, revealing his small brain case and massive tree-knot brow and cheekbones.
"Wait, stop," he says, panting. "I'll kill him."
The warriors pause and look unsure. Rahet turns back to the king. He raises his head, then brings it down hard like a club. There's a sickening thump as it makes contact with the king's bony skull, and the older man curses. Rahet clubs him again, and this time the king only gurgles. Rawhead looks back at the warriors. In the glint of the fire, you can see his tree-knot brow is stripped of skin. One of the warriors gives him a nod as though to say, "Go ahead." Rawhead brings his head down again and again and again. The thunks give way to cracks, then to the crushing and smushing brain and skull. Rahet rises from the ground on shaking limbs. His face is covered in gore. The warriors, who only moments before were ready to kill him, now lift the usurper on their shoulders and cheer his name, Rahet. The rest of the warriors open their lungs with whoops. Drumming and piping and singing overtakes the sound of the bonfire. The medicine woman takes the rhino horn necklace that is the symbol of monarchy and places it around Rawhead's neck. The only thing not animated around the bonfire is the limp body of the old man lying on the ground.
"We have a new king,"
Lazar says. His eyes glint with intelligence, and you can tell by his sly smile that he's scheming something. He begins to walk into the darkness.
"Wait, where are you going?" you ask.
"There will be a raid tomorrow. New kings always start with a raid. Best to get some rest."
"What do you mean, raid?"
"Our warriors move in as quiet as they can. They kill, rape, steal, and run. The giants are a bunch of big dumb fools, but killing them somehow means honor for kings."
"So, who's going on this raid?"
"Ha! Don't worry. Not us. We're too small. Only warriors go on raids."
"Oh, that's a relief." The old king is thrown into the bonfire, which explodes in a frenzy of sparks. Lazar is illuminated from the darkness. His ugly, rodent-like face is contorted into something hideous, and you think, almost evil.
There's a booming in the distance, a rhythmical, deep booming that fills the valley.
Giants, Lazar says.
From the stone walls, you see warriors from your city running over the crest of the hill and into the valley. They look hysterical with waving arms. They must have thrown away their shields and spears.
Looks like the raid didn't go so well, Lazar says.
The image of a giant clobbering them with a club flashes through your mind's eye, and you shudder.
Will these walls protect us from them?
Yes, if they don't find the hole.
There's a hole?
Lazar laughs.
Yes, but don't worry. They're dumb creatures, not capable of seeking out such subtleties. Not on their own, at least.
The first of the warriors are now close enough to hail.
Open the gates!
They shout. The white paint is dripping down their bodies from the sweat. You hear the creaking of the gates below as they strain against the tin hinges. The booming grows louder. King Rahet appears over the crest, surrounded by a bodyguard of loyal followers. These carry spears. Moments later, a giant hairy ape, twice the size of Rahet, thunders over the crest. It smashes one of the warriors with both hands like a club. It then swings the other way, knocking a second warrior high into the air. The booming grows louder. The surviving warriors rush at the ape in a loose phalanx, their tin-tipped spears pressing the beast back. From this great distance, it looks like the warriors merely tap the ape with their spears, but you see it roar and collapse. Rawhead joins the warriors, and together they stab the beast while it swings at them in hopeless bursts from the ground. Before they can finish off the beast, three more giants rise over the crest and instantly decimate the warriors with clubs and boulders. Rahet slams his spear into the nearest one. His spear breaks, and Rahet pulls out his club. He swings hard and breaks the giant's arm. The giant slaps Rahet with the back of his hand. The king collapses to the ground. Their surviving warriors snap out of their stupor and race to aid their king. The giants are overwhelmed, and the warriors drag Rahet towards the city. The booming grows louder. The crest of the hill is now lined with giants. Hundreds of them, maybe thousands. Some hold clubs, others stone hand axes. A number of them dress in thick elephant hides for armor. Many beat stretched skin drums. Those drums are made of the skin of killed people from Benny Grath, Lazar says, looking for a reaction from you. He gets what he wanted.
Close the gates!
Yells one of the fleeing warriors as he runs into the fortress. The jumpy guards begin to heave the massive gate shut.
No, wait!
Cries out another.
Wait for the king!
At the command of a big giant with a large crown of feathers, the entire army runs at a sprint. King Rahet has caught his wind and is now running with his bodyguard. All the warriors have thrown their spears and shields away.
Will they catch him?
You ask Lazar.
Maybe.
You're surprised by how little he seems to care. At what seems like the very last moment, the king and his warriors run through the gates. Two giants manage to barge through before the gates are closed. They're quickly killed. The rest of the army crashes against the walls like a tidal wave against a breakwater. It seems like everyone in the city is on the walls. Old men, mothers, young boys. They all hurl projectiles down on the bloodthirsty giants who scream in pain and rage. Some of the giants try to scale the wood walls, but without ladders, it's useless. The giant with the crown of feathers yells out some kind of command, and the army pulls back. They circle the walls, well out of bow and spear range, looking for some weak point to strike. They ford the river that butts up against the walls. Soon they're on the other side, looking everywhere for a breach in the walls.
So, where did you say that hole was? You ask Lazar.
He just smiles, his devilish smile, and winks at you. The sun sets blood red, and the giants set up campfires in the shadow of the hill. King Rahet orders an emergency meeting in the center of the city, the same place he killed the old king last night. A new bonfire is lit, and the medicine woman is called. The medicine woman is wrinkly and old, with hair like a bird's nest, and she wears elaborate skins of zebras and giraffes, just a little bit rough around the edges. She's one of the smaller hominids, very similar to a human, but with a thicker brow ridge and longer arms. Her eyes are big and glassy, and the other hominids swear they are conduits to a different world. She speaks in tongues as the terrified crowd watches. She pulls out a bundle of herbs and, by some sleight of hand, lights them in a burst of white smoke. The audience gasps. She wafts the herbs around the crowd, darting from one side to the next, so no one knows where she'll appear. She approaches the king, who sits on his throne at the edge of the gathering. She wafts the smoking herbs around his body and dances. The king leans back, his eyes darting as he tries to rein in his fear. The medicine woman turns. Her eyes roll back into her head, and she moans as if possessed. She gyrates and convulses. She screams and foams at the mouth, and a trickle of blood rolls from her lips and down her chin. The crowd is terror-struck. The king is on the edge of his seat. Only Lazar looks calm and, you think, skeptical. The medicine woman collapses to the ground, gurgling. She looks like she's on the verge of death, or like she's having an epileptic fit. You have to force back your instinct to rush into the ring and check on her. Others around the edge look like they're struggling against the same instinct, while the more experienced, older ones press them back. The old woman raises her head. Her eyes are bloodshot, and she looks exhausted. The king motions for his aides to help. They rush in and tend to her, supporting her head and giving her water.
I saw the future, she says.
The crowd gasps, and soon everyone's talking. They're scared.
Speak, speak, woman, the king says. What did you see?
Fire, death, screaming, oh, it was awful.
She begins to sob. The king is now standing, and he looks terrified, perhaps even more terrified than the crowd.
Who was suffering in this future? The giants?
No, she says. It was a city. It was burning.
There are cries from the gathered people.
Yes, yes, it was burning. And from the ashes rose a white rhino. It fell, and a rat climbed on top of it. On the rat's head was a crown of feathers.
The crowd murmurs. It's obvious who the white rhino is. Rawhead wears a white rhino horn around his neck, the symbol of his power. Even his shield is made of rhino skin. Rawhead stands in the ring, sweating.
Enough, he says, and storms towards her. Is that all you saw, old woman?
Not all. No, my king, not all. From the ashes grew a new city, a city made of shimmering stone. And there were rats, more rats, climbing on everything, spreading fire across the whole world.
People in the crowd scream. Rawhead looks frazzled.
Stop! Stop, all of you, and listen to me, he says. This is not a bad omen. It's good. The burning and destruction she saw was us destroying the giants. We're smaller than them. We're the rats in her vision, conquering them and all the world.
What about the white rhino?
Comes a voice from somewhere in the crowd. There's murmuring consent. The white rhino clearly rises from the flames.
Yeah, and dies.
Do not take the death of the rhino so literally. It is a symbol of my generosity. I give you, my people, everything, everything I have. And from my toils, we will be rewarded with a great city of stone.
What about the rat? It wore a crown of feathers. Isn't that the same crown that the king of the giants wears?
People, my people, I don't have all the answers, but what I do know is that rats are not giants. We have nothing to fear from them.
Drumming can be heard from the camps outside the walls, casting a chill over the fortress city. Lazar gazes into the night with his beady eyes, and you swear his nose twitches.
You wake to see Lazar staring down at you. He's soaking wet, and there's blood smeared on his cheeks. His eyes are wild.
You scared me. What's going on? You say.
Look, he says. From a bloody, wet sack, he pulls out the crown of feathers. He beams at you.
Is that what I think it is? How did you get that?
He looks proud.
I'm going to give it to the king.
That seems a bit dangerous, don't you think? Considering the prophecy last night?
That's the point.
You're nuts, you know. Look, everyone's pretty jittery right now. If you show up with that crown of feathers, well, people will definitely think that that rat from the prophecy was you. No offense or anything.
I want them to think that.
But that's mad. They'll kill you. They'll probably kill me, too, since we're both, well, similar. You have to avoid the word Homo sapien. Lazar looks mischievous, and there's something in his smile that tells you there's more to his story.
That's why we have to stick together.
No, wait. You aren't suggesting I join you.
Exactly. If I die, they'll hunt you down. They'll think you're a rat just like me. But if this works, I'll need you. I'll need more like us. A lot more.
If what works?
I don't believe in prophecies, but I do know an opportunity when I see one. Come on, let's go see the king.
King Rawhet bolts out of his throne, and the noblemen of the court gasp. In the silence that follows, the sacred fire wheezes and sputters with young wet wood.
This is the crown of the giants, Lazar says, as though none of them recognizes his trophy. That means the king of the giants is dead.
Lazar walks around the sacred fire with the swagger of a Shakespearean actor, holding the feathered crown up to the shadowed figures who seem to recoil at it. And who killed the king of the giants, Rawhet says.
I did,
Mort gasps. How?
At night, when he was sleeping.
Still more gasps, these ones disapproving. Lazar next presents his bloody bag, raising it over his head. He unties the rope and turns it upside down. Out tumble a mass of large severed ears that thunk and bounce on the ground.
57. It's amazing how easy it is to kill giants when they're sleeping.
This produces a storm of disgusted and terrified chatter. Advisors approach King Rawhet and whisper to him, covering their mouths with their hands. Amongst the chatter, you distinctly hear the words prophecy and rat. You feel the sweat rolling down your forehead.
What do you want? King Rawhet says. He doesn't hide his revulsion and, for a brief moment, fear.
I merely want the opportunity to serve my king, Lazar says, and gives a deep bow.
What are you?
Your loyal subject.
No, you are a demon, and a baseless one at that. What honor is there in killing a king while he sleeps?
Is it regicide to kill a giant?
They are big, dumb brutes, creatures to be slaughtered. Feathers don't make a king, my lord. but while he sleeps in his bed. No, this breaks the very foundation of our warrior code. Do it in the day, surely. Do it with your spear or with your hands. Do it in the field of battle. But to kill a king while he sleeps, even if he is a giant, this I cannot accept.
I will bow to your judgment, my lord.
Take him away and slit his throat, him and this little accomplice of his as well.
Two big warriors appear from the shadows. Lazar lifts the crown and dangles it over the sacred fire.
Another step and I burn the crown.
The warriors pause and look back to the king. He motions them to back off. Then King Rahet steps down from his throne. He walks slowly and deliberately towards you and Lazar. His chest seems to puff up, and murder flashes in his eyes.
Ah, Lazar says, so you do want the crown. You may not respect my work, but you value its results.
The wooden door swings open and you're blinded by the light. The sound of battle fills the room.
My lord, says a voice, they're attacking!
There's chaos in the hall. Your eyes haven't adjusted to the light when you hear a roar from Rahet. Lazar grabs you by the arm and yanks.
Come on,
he says, and you follow him into the blinding daylight outside.
That went better than I hoped, Lazar says. Much, much better.
His voice echoes in the winding stone walls as you descend into the cistern.
What do you mean? We almost got killed.
And you'd better know a way out of this place, because you can bet they're going to be looking for us.
Oh yes, I have a way out. Don't you worry about that. Now, look at this.
From his skins, he pulls out the white rhino horn. It glistens in the torchlight, and you can make out intricate carvings you hadn't seen before. The base of the horn is capped with tin and is speckled with fine jewels. A carefully brocaded tin chain dangles over Lazar's wrist. It's broken in the middle, where he must have yanked it from Rahet's neck.
We're dead. You know that, don't you?
Not so, Lazar says.
His mischievous smile gives way to something more pleasurable.
In fact, this has made everything much easier.
Enough with this. This alluding to some sort of plan. What is it? Spit it out. Since you've dragged me into this mess, you might as well tell me how we're going to get out.
Want to know?
Yes.
If I told you, you'd run back to King Rahet and beg to be executed. It's best you don't know.
Oh yeah? Well, I'm not going a step further unless you do tell me.
Here we are,
he says, splashing his foot in the black water. The stairs continue right down into it, as though they were flooded.
What do you mean, here we are?
Lazar is already wading into the water. He shivers and lets out a yelp that could only mean it's freezing cold.
Where are you going?
Remember that hole in the walls I told you about? It's down there. This water comes from the river.
How far?
How long can you hold your breath? Lazar dives into the water. The last thing you see of him is his feet kicking as he sinks into the cold, dark pool. You stand there for a long time, considering your options. Blast, you finally say, and wade into the water. Your lungs are on fire. The terror takes over and becomes unbearable. It consumes you, begging you to turn around, begging you to open your mouth and breathe. Forward or back, those are your options. Through the fog of instinct, you manage to will yourself, clawing at the slimy rock walls, pulling yourself through the water. Your only comfort is that Lazar has done this before. He's ahead of you. But then, a terrifying thought crosses your mind. What if he pulled himself down some different hidden tunnel? What if you're dragging yourself into some blind shaft and towards your death? Just as this thought begins to take hold, you see a round blue hole. You scramble towards it. It takes impossibly long, and your lungs, already constricted from the freezing cold, beg for air. Then you're there. You burst out of the hole and are suddenly pulled by a violent current that tumbles you head over heels, punching out whatever air was left in your lungs. Water sucks in. You try to cough it out, but it's too late. Your lungs fill, and now the panic is total. A hand grabs your chin and yanks your head above the surface. You cough and puke the water out of your lungs as Lazar swims you to the rocky bank. A battle rages up over the side of the bank, and you're sure if someone were at the top of the bank, they could hear you and, of course, see you. Just a bit further upstream are the wooden walls of the fortress. Let's keep moving, Lazar says. He runs, crouching downriver, towards the tree line. Sputtering and coughing, you manage to pull yourself up and follow. The campfires burn. This time, they're between you and the fortress. The night is filled with the sounds of big cavernous lungs moaning out their air, the sounds of wounded and dying giants. Those are the ones, Lazar says, pointing to a group of bickering giants. They wear feathers on their arms and are wrapped in elephant skins, symbols of wealth and power. What about them, you say? But it's too late. Lazar has already stepped into the clearing. Blast, you say, and run after him. A group of warrior giants rush at you with their clubs over their heads. Seeing a commotion, the high-status giants turn.
Hold, one of them says. Is that you, Lazar?
You're stunned. They know him.
Yes, it's me.
What do you want?
I I want to offer you my condolences for your late king, and my services in whatever way I can help, of course.
The giants look stony-eyed.
You told us about the raid the other day, and we thank you for that. We wouldn't have been able to ambush your warriors without your help.
The giant looks Lazar up and down, and you sense scorn in his expression.
But, little man, you are no use to us anymore.
Lazar doesn't flinch at the insult.
King Rahet entered your camp last night. He killed your king personally while he slept next to his fire. He killed 57 of your warriors also while they slept. He did this because he needed honor. His entire people saw him run away like a coward, throw away his spear and run, terrified before your might. And he needed to prove he was powerful and honorable. So he killed your king, stole his crown, and hacked off 57 ears of your best warriors.
Honorable, a giant says. You call murdering a king while he sleeps honorable?
The giant raises his club and looks like he's about to smash Lazar. But a high-status giant catches him before it can fall. They look at Lazar with cold eyes.
He thought it was honorable, yes. He is a thoughtless, brutal king. He is not a man so much as a creature, a beast who sits on a throne. And he rules his people with the same terror he showed you last night. We live under this beast. Honorable? No, he is an animal.
The giant's eyes change from cool to anger as they nod in agreement, their eagerness for revenge fueled by rage.
What good is this information? So we know it was your king. We were going to kill him anyways. You are small. What can you do?
Lazar pulls the rhino horn from his skins and holds it up to the giants. Their mouths drop.
I can do more than you think. What do you want?
The giants look at one another, amazed, confused.
Tell me, what do you want? Why are your campfires spread out in this field?
Revenge, says one of them.
No.
Honor.
No.
War.
No. You're here for power. Power and wealth. I can give these things to you. I can give you these things in endless supply. Look at you. You're huge, strong, mighty. You're a warrior people with strength beyond all comprehension. But you rush at the walls to your deaths. You have no strategy, no direction. You have no king.
Are you implying that you should be our king? You, little man?
The giants laugh.
I will get you through those walls, and the walls of many other peoples. You will spread across the world, and as you do, your wealth and power will compound. You will each count your slaves, not in the hundreds, but in the thousands. You will each rule over lands that stretch beyond what you could walk in 100 days. You have the power and the strength to conquer wherever you wish. But I have the intelligence. You need me for these things. The price I ask is the crown.
The giants aren't laughing now. Something inside them has changed, and their eyes are distant, catching on to some unbelievable dream that is even now transforming their minds, changing the direction of their species,
changing the future.
You can do this, little one?
Yes, I can do this. But don't take my word for it. Crown me only if I get you through those walls tomorrow.
One of the biggest and grandest of the high-status warriors steps forward, his thick brow ridge furrowed.
If you break us into the fortress city tomorrow, we will make you king. But to remain king, you must give us these victories you promise. We will follow you only as long as you keep winning. The moment the victories end, you will not only lose your crown, but your life, little man.
I ask for nothing more, Lazar says. His lips are curled in a wicked grin, and he bows to the giants. He gives you a sidelong glance that seems to say, I told you so.
The city is being sacked. You hear screams and laughter outside the great hall. Inside, the mood is tense and somber. Lazar sits on the throne, and a congregation of giants and native hominids fill the room. In a ritual ceremony, the medicine woman places the rhino horn around Lazar's neck, while a shaman from the giants places the crown of feathers on his head. Lazar looks serene, regal, arrogant in his new role, his chin high, and his eyes slits of contempt. He flicks his hand, and Rahet, the deposed king, is raised from the ground. He grunts in pain. His arms are tied behind his back, and he limps on one leg. His blood is bright against his white body paint. Lazar's lips curl into a smile, and he lounges back into his throne, flinging a leg over the armrest.
So, Rahet, what do you think of this new situation?
Rahet doesn't say anything. Lazar nods, and a giant punches him in the ribs, forcing a high-pitched squeal from the deposed king's lungs. The giants have to keep him from collapsing.
Sorry, what was that? I couldn't hear you.
Fight me, Rahet says. Fight me with your bare hands. You can't take my horn like this.
He looks around the room for support from the giants. None meet his gaze.
I can take whatever I like.
Lazar leaps down from his throne and strides towards Rahet.
Things have changed, Rahet. The world has changed. No more of this savage machoism. Now, it's what's in here that counts.
Lazar taps his head.
Not here. He pokes Rahet in the arm and chest. The age of the rhino is over. Welcome to the age of the rat.
Lazar walks casually towards the sacred fire. He picks up a burning branch and studies it thoughtfully.
These flames have been burning for 100 years,
ever since these walls were built. The fire has always been protected. Protected. You see, that's the problem. You can't build a proper kingdom from behind walls. Pigs live in walls. Chickens live in walls. And we're better than pigs and chickens, aren't we? All you have to do is tear down the walls, and the flames will spread. Lazar leaps up to his throne and raises the flaming branch over his head. We will spread out over the land. Wherever we go, we will bring this fire. Our sacred fire will burn the walls of every people we meet. We will take them for our slaves. We will annex their land, and we will enjoy their harvests. Look at this flame. It will burn in 1,000 settlements, and it will burn forever. The crowd is silent, reverential. They praise their new king with their downcast eyes, which salivate at his vision. I think these flames need a sacrifice, a blood sacrifice. He steps down towards Rahet. We need to offer the gods a symbol of our desire to change. We need to burn the old way of life as a promise to never go back. We need to burn the old king. Lazar pokes Rahet with the fire stick. It hisses and crackles against his skin, and Rahet leaps back against the giants. He's panting hard, and his thick, bony brow casts a dark shadow over his eyes. Lazar looks straight at him, and you can almost feel them wrestling in the long, tense space between them. Lazar finally breaks the gaze and turns towards his throne. Slit his throat and throw him in the flames, he says. The ropes snap, and Rahet dashes towards Lazar. Lazar turns just in time to see Rahet grab his neck. His scream is cut short as Rahet crumples his airpipe. One of the giants stabs Rahet with a spear, and the deposed king reels back in pain. Other giants race in with clubs and spears and smash him to a pulp. You run up to Lazar. He is lying on the ground. His eyes have already glazed over. You stare into them, while around the room resonates the sound of growls and hissing and arguing. The medicine woman takes you by the shoulders. She takes the rhino horn from Lazar's neck and places it around your own. She then fits the feather crown on your head. With her hands on your shoulders, she raises you from the ground, and then she melts back into the crowd. Slowly, the bickering and shouting turns to whispers as the assembled giants and noblemen turn to stare at you, their new king.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. I'd like to thank Cryochamber for the rich, dark, ambient music you heard in this show. I'll post links in the show notes on the Twilight Histories website. If you enjoyed this show,
you'll be happy to know there's a bonus track for this episode. Fast forward this world, and an empire has formed. It's an empire full of diverse hominids of all shapes and sizes. Some rule, others are ruled. Things are getting dangerous. Have a listen to this sample.
Take off your clothes, King Maltar says.
Like the others at the king's court, he's dressed in bright orange robes, accented by the skins of exotic animals. On his head is wrapped various colored cloths held together with intricate bronze and gold needles. He has a nose ring of gold that connects to his earring, with a chain that sways when he moves his head, and on his wrists are gold bangles that chime together like little bells whenever he moves his hands. The human takes off his clothes. He's shaking in fear. The lounging giants release their big, bellowing laughs. One of the more drunk giants throws a hard green fruit at the man, who falls to the ground with the force. This unleashes a fresh wave of laughter, mostly directed at the drunk giant who displayed such bravado. When the human picks himself up, you see a bruise on his ribs, speckled with pricks of blood, where the fruit's spikes punctured his skin.
Look at that! The weakling is so small, so pathetic, says a giant, lounging on his couch and playing with his food.
I think they're cute,
another says, this one a female giant.
I keep a weakling for a pet, you know.
A pet? Tell me you don't let it inside.
You can find the rest of this show on the website by going to twilighthistories.com and clicking on the store. When you purchase a time travel adventure, you are supporting this show. So please go to the website at twilighthistories.com and click on the store. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to the Twilight Histories with Jordan Harbour.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.